Okay, I'll be talking about looking at some molecular markers that I've been using for measuring soybean aphid migration and gene flow. I don't think I need to go over what a significant pest of soybean aphid is. In fact, I think that's why we're all here in this room. And based on the previous talks, I won't go into that. But Kelly has mentioned a little bit about the population cycles. So there's an overwintering stage here on the overwintering host buckthorn. We have a spring or summer colonization from buckthorn to soybeans here. And then here is where the asexual reproduction occurs. Populations increase. And then there's migration, well, presumably large-scale migration among other soybean fields once populations, you know, really increase quite rapidly here. This is the, and then there's fall migration back to the buckthorn where the sexual generation occurs again. This is sort of the part of the cycle where I'm most interested in, is trying to identify, you know, what level of mass migration occurs, and of course on a large geographical area. I'm based in Ohio, where we're sort of maybe on, not completely on the eastern fringe of the aphid, but pretty close, and so pretty far from the main central epicenter of the aphids, is probably Minnesota or Wisconsin. So the objectives I had were to test the usefulness of microsatellite markers from related species. And I apologize that I do not have the citations on the presentation, but I do have the citations with me. So if you're interested in those citations, I can get those for you. The other objective is to determine the level of genetic diversity of the soybean aphid in North America. And I wanted to compare those to Korean samples, basically because I'm interested in the level of polymorphism. And I wanted to make sure that any reductions in polymorphisms I saw in the North American samples was not due to the genetic bottleneck, but just to the inherent processes of microsatellite markers. And so the Korean samples presumably acted as a control because that was from their native range in Asia. Presumably acted as a control. We'll get to that in a bit. And then the final was to estimate the level of genetic differentiation among soybean aphid populations in North America. And here I would predict that the level of genetic differentiation among populations should be low. So if mass migration is occurring, so most of the populations I collect, they should pretty much share the same amount of genetic variation. So the samples. I did not sample all these samples. In fact, most of the people that had sent me samples are sitting here in the audience, and I'll get to that in the acknowledgments. And if I hadn't thanked you personally yet, I'm more than happy to. Well, I would like to do that as well because it took a lot of work. But we sampled, or my collaborators sampled one individual per plant. Plants randomly sampled within a field. I asked them to just pull a leaf, put it in a Ziploc bag, do that 50 times in a field, and send that to me. And then I took one individual aphid from that leaf. We had 10 North American populations consisting of about 30 to 40 individuals each. These black dots represent the areas that they were collected, and they more or less represent the geographical place based on GIS coordinates of where they were collected from. One thing to keep in mind for the rest of the talk is that my Michigan and Ontario samples were collected in early July, where the rest of my populations were collected after the second week of August, and that might be important later on in the talk. My Korean populations were tested from here, about 24 individuals each. And again, the idea for the Korean was to sort of act that as a control because that's where probably most of the genetic variation occurred. So these are the microsatellite loci I tested. Again, I did not develop these. These were previously developed for these two species, Aphis gossypii and then the black aphid here. 8 loci here, and then I can't count. I think that's about 10 loci here for the black aphid. Of these, 3 of them failed to amplify within aphis glycines populations, and a further 6 were completely monomorphic within aphis glycines. And I should say that these are all polymorphic in the species that they were designed from. And in fact, testing the black aphid microsatellites within aphis gossypii, the cotton aphid, was also polymorphic as well. So there's something weird going on in aphis glycines where we're getting a lot of monomorphic microsatellites. So out of that, we had 2 microsatellite loci that were monomorphic in the U.S. populations but were polymorphic from Korea. So out of this whole list, we were down to 7 usable loci for the soybean aphid, which was less than I expected, but you know, you gotta deal with sometimes what you're dealt with. So this is the heterozygosity values, and it's kind of small because it's a big table. But the main point here is that I list the observed heterozygosity and the expected heterozygosity here. These are the populations, and then these are the loci. Most were in Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium, meaning that the observed heterozygosity matched the expected based on the allele frequencies. But there were 9 out of 70 that were not, and it seemed like it was more Michigan. The Michigan population had 4 out of 7 loci with heterozygote excess, meaning that this population is not in sort of population equilibrium. The Korean populations also were not in equilibrium with high heterozygote excess, but they had similar levels of genetic diversity. So in any population I tested from the microsatellites, I only had 2 alleles per locus, which I think is very unfortunate. The reason people use microsatellites is because there's a lot of alleles per locus, but I mean, again, this is what I had to deal with. So now the more interesting data. Looking at pairwise genetic differentiation, so here on the table, I have the populations here, and this is the pairwise table. And these are genetic differentiation values based on the FST. FST has a scale of 0 to 1, where 0 represents no genetic differentiation, and then 1 represents extreme genetic differentiation, you know, different species. So most of the values here are not significantly different from 0, and I would say pretty low. The ones that are highlighted and in bold are the ones that were significantly different from 0, so significant genetic differentiation among populations. The main thing to notice here is that Michigan and Ontario were different from all of the populations in the study, and they were also different, significantly different from each other here, of FST value 0.001. When we look at average pairwise FST, Michigan was really high, 0.101. Ontario high as well, 0.076. Ohio was relatively high, although you can see here that most of them were not significantly different from 0, and actually it sort of is biased by this sample here. But the rest of the populations, all the average pairwise FSTs were less than 0.02. So we're seeing this clustering out of the Michigan and Ontario samples. We did an AMOVA, which is analysis of molecular variants, similar to an ANOVA. And so here I grouped my eastern populations versus the western populations, because there might be some evidence that there's geographical structuring within aphid populations. The eastern populations were Michigan, Ontario, and Ohio, and then the rest of the populations. By grouping it this way, it really only explained 1.1% of the variation, of the genetic variation. When I grouped it by time, so Michigan and Ontario, which were my July populations, and the rest in August, I had better explained the variation better by grouping by time and not by geography. I did try some more sophisticated Bayesian genetic clustering programs. I saw no significant clustering, probably because I had low resolution of only 2 alleles. So basically, we're looking at the FST analyses. Isolation by distance is a common effect when you have large-scale migration. Populations that are farther apart are less likely to share migrants. Therefore, as geographic distance increases, genetic distance between those populations also increase. So you should see a positive correlation, although I saw no significant positive correlation in my samples. Because Michigan and Ontario were really kind of my outliers in the population, so these were the Michigan and Ontario samples. So here I have FST, here I have distance. I removed those samples and redid the isolation by distance, because I think by removing Michigan and Ontario, I really got what occurred during the migration late in August. Again, I saw no significant correlation even by removing Michigan and Ontario samples. In fact, there's a slight negative correlation here. I think that this is just because there's very slight differentiation, non-significant differentiation among populations. And we look at the values here, 0.005 and 0.001. So trying to find isolation by distance at this scale of genetic differentiation is very difficult to detect, even if it does exist. So one thing that I wanted to look at is, because of this time thing, and this is a common thing that I found out with aphid population genetics, is to look at genotypic classes. And a genotypic class is pretty much a clone of those that have identical alleles, or those that have the identical genotype. So here I have the population, and here I have the number of classes, or the number of distinct clones in that population, so those that share the same genotype. And here I have the total number of samples, and by dividing by a simple division, you can come up with a genotype of diversity. And this is sort of the percentage of different clones that you have. So when I did that analysis, I saw that Michigan had a genotypic diversity of 0.42, so 42%, and Ontario of 60%. You contrast that to the Illinois population here, 97%. That means if you take two random samples out of that, you have a 97% chance that those are different clones. You do that in Michigan, you only have a 42% chance that those are different clones. So you can see that the clonal diversity is much lower in my Michigan and Ontario samples. And so if we correlate that with time, we see a kind of a positive correlation here, which increasing genotypic diversity over time. Now, my samples weren't explicitly sampled to test for this, but I think this is an important thing that might be tested in the future to see if this actually occurs. And I think what's happening is that my Michigan and Ontario samples were founded by a small number of individuals from buckthorn. So this represents the initial colonization period. And it doesn't appear to be a geographic because the differentiation with my Ohio samples is not significant with most Western states. So I think what's going on is the early collections are more likely to consist of the few colonizers that are able to colonize the soybean field, expand through asexual reproduction, and then be part of the mass migration later on. And so the early collections are probably not migrants from the other soybean fields. And so when you get the migration of other soybean fields, you're getting more clones coming into the other fields. So conclusions, microsatellite markers are somewhat useful. I'm debating whether or not there are some potential other microsatellite markers that I have that I can test. I'm not sure if I want to go that way or not. I don't know how much more informative it's going to be. Looking at genetic diversity of the soybean aphid in North America between Korea, we see low levels of genetic diversity. But my control was kind of wacky, so I don't know. I still can't compare that to what's actually known for in the native range. Because my Korean and North American samples shared the similar levels of genetic diversity. And it may be also environmental factors, especially in geography in Korea. So this is a Google Earth picture of one of the populations I had in Korea. So here you can see sort of the crop areas, the arable land, and it's sort of right in the middle of all this huge terrain here. So I think that might be affecting what's going on in my Korean samples. It also could also be an introduced population if indeed the more native range is in China. And maybe the Korean was recently introduced as well, too. And so finally, by estimated level of genetic differentiation, we see low levels of genetic differentiation for most samples, likely sharing migrants, although the power is sort of weak because of the low polymorphism. Michigan and Ontario significantly different, probably because they were collected earlier. I want to make sure I get to this acknowledgement. Again, especially most of these people that are in the room that sent me all these samples, and then the Ohio Soybean Council for funding. So if there's any time, maybe we can take some questions. Oh, sorry. Well, I'll be around, so.